Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Oh, boy, it's going to be quite a show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Media Project. Welcome, welcome. We hope that you can put up with us. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with my great colleagues here. Rosemary Romeo, investigative journalist and professor at the University of Albany. Rosemary, howdy do.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And Dr. Alan Shartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, a columnist, commentator, etc.
You think you're so special just because you're tall.
No, I think I'm special for other reasons. But anyway, sorry, I was offered that opportunity, folks. What can you say? It has nothing to do with your size, Dr. Shartok. It is
This is reminding me of a Republican debate.
Oh, the size. That actually is a topic for the media this week. It's not only in the Republican debate where the size of one's penis becomes an issue. Though that's not what we were talking about here, I have to...
Although it is interesting what becomes fodder for the press. In other words, what comes out of a debate? Let's say more people will remember the size of Donald Trump's hands and the equivalency than almost anything else that was said during that time.
And whose fault do you think that is?
Yours.
That's not the fault. That's because the candidates brought it up. You know, this was intentionally what Marco Rubio was doing.
And
then.
It's difficult to talk about this on radio where words are monitored, but print style is changing. It very much is against profanity, and we've had changes in that style to accommodate coverage of this debate.
Well, that's true, actually, because, you know, you're right. The AP, in fact, has had to discuss. Their standards editor has come out with a memo about a couple of the words that the candidates have used that ordinarily don't find their way onto the wire.
Right.
That's right. So if somebody says a euphemism for a woman's private part, which is also known as a little cat.
This is like charades, oral charades.
Sounds like.
Well, I'm not saying it. I'm not losing the license. But the fact of the matter is, if they use it on the air, then it's very hard not to report it.
Right. Donald Trump yelled that at his rival Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
And he then repeated the word. His wife, in an interview, chastised her husband. Mrs. Trump chastised her husband for using what she referred to as that word. And newspaper editors have been agonizing over about how they report on
and
this.
And what do you do about Lindsey Graham, the senator who referred to his party as having to do with guano of bats?
Yeah, guano of bats.
My party has gone crazy. You know, we're not going to say it.
Or as we say on the radio,
It is something. So the AP standards editor, listen to these 2 points that he says. The AP has its own standards, which include using vulgar and obscene quotes only when totally necessary to the story. Mm-hmm. And then AP subscribers, string word, AP members also have their own standards. So, you know, and we do sometimes if you need a certain word to understand the context in which it's being applied, you sometimes will use it. We have used in print the N-word, which we don't use except in direct quotes.
Yeah.
We don't use except when we do. You know, I don't know how else to say that.
And we have like little tricks like asterisk, and everyone knows what that is, but we don't say it.
And my favorite thing on the radio, Rosemary, is when we bleep anything, because the imagination will make it worse than it actually is.
I know, it's kind of fun. Interestingly, though, the internet is changing things, and that several sites have BuzzFeed, for example, has an ethics and style book that allows for the use of vulgarity and profanity and says that it's become part of the language of young people and therefore should
Absolutely.
Be acceptable.
Well, now, what about this, Rosemary? You often have made the argument that one of the reasons that rape is so yep. verboten, that it is viewed as a shame, is because we don't report rape victims. Do you think that we should go ahead and use these words and that would diminish some of their power?
No, I think overuse does diminish their power, and I like the way we use it now. When Dick Cheney several years ago said that Joe Biden could go fornicate himself, remember that?
Yeah.
We did use that word. The Washington Post went through great, you know, hand-wringing mm-hmm. and then used the word because that was in context, and it had a lot of power. Words have power, and I think we have to be careful how we use them. The total ban on anything, not reporting rape victims' names, not ever using obscenity, not ever using an unnamed source, I think that's when we get into trouble.
Well, yeah. I'd like to register to make a comment here, if you two would let me in for a moment.
Yeah, you have such a hard time getting
it's
a
tough,
word
you know,
in.
And we never hear his thoughts.
And that is, never do.
And that is, let's assume for a moment that Trump is a vulgar candidate.
Okay. For the
So why would we use a euphemism if, in fact, his vulgarism is what will disclose to the people that he's vulgar?
It doesn't. If you use it, then you become vulgar, too.
I'm not buying it.
You're not buying it. Well, I wish that I could say that showing Donald Trump as he really is diminishes his power. But it seems that we, as the media, are getting discredited for showing so much of him that that's why he's powerful.
Well, what is our choice?
P.T. Barnum. I know. I don't think we have a choice. But P.T. Barnum's maxim, there's no such thing as bad publicity, seems to be held against us. And I've always said, okay, so do you want us not to cover his part of the debates? Do you want us not to cover things when he calls John McCain a loser? Or
Ted Cruz, the lying Ted?
Yes. Yeah, should we not cover that?
It does seem to me that the FCC standards aside, which govern this stuff, mm-hmm. which govern where we are here on the radio, but don't govern print.
I think that's terrible, by the way.
Yeah, it's interesting. In this case, you would think that there shouldn't be any such prohibition when you're covering public debate on with public figures making public commentary. You know, when actually it was what Joe Biden said to the president when he signed the Affordable Care Act. He said, this is a BFD.
Yep.
And, you know, if you were to quote the
BFD,
vice president.
BFD, big is the first word and deal is the third word.
Yes.
And imagine what the F is.
It has asterisks in it.
Fooey. But if you were to have quoted the vice president precisely here on WAMC, the FCC would be on your tail. Mm-hmm. And that would be an unfortunate thing, right?
Well, no, you really raise a very good and strong point, and that is, if you're going to have freedom of the press, just because the government has something to do with the way that things are put out, and I think that's wrong. I just think it's wrong. I don't think we should be a second-class citizen compared to you, Rex, of all people.
I always remember way back in the Nixon administration, Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butz
oh,
made
yeah.
a very racist joke. It was awful.
I remember it.
And he ended up losing his job for it. We could not report the joke because it was so bad. A top official of the United States could say it in a public place, but we could not report
oh,
it.
It wasn't in a public place. This is yeah, what's great.
Right,
you remember
right.
the detail? It was on a flight. And he was sitting, and the three
yes.
people sitting on the flight there, one was Earl Butz, the Secretary of Agriculture, one was Pat Boone, the singer, and one was John Dean. And one of those other two people somehow leaked the word of what
oh, I wonder
Earl
who
Benson
that
said.
Was.
But it was a racist comment, right?
It was, yes, it was.
It was
yeah.
very racist. And
well, and it was also, it used this same word.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
It did.
Yeah.
And we got calls in our newsroom from people saying, okay, what was the joke?
Right.
Everyone wanted to know. It was such a big deal he got fired or he had to leave over that. But we couldn't tell it. That's not right.
And of all the guys who has ever appropriately named, Earl Butz was right up there.
Mm-hmm. Earl? You thought you were Earl. Okay, Earl. But we were going to talk.
We're going to get letters from a lot of Earls.
It wasn't.
Oh, no, it wasn't the Earl I was worrying
oh,
about.
Oh, I see.
Gee. Oh, I'm so
I didn't
sorry.
Know that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So we were talking about hand size or something else.
Yeah.
And because it was it's not only in the presidential race that this has come up. It's also come up in the context of a fellow named Terry Bollea, B-O-L-L-E-A. You may know him better as Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, yeah.
Former professional wrestler.
The Hulk.
And Hulk Hogan is suing Gawker Media for $100 million in damages.
Yeah, I think we have to be very careful here because we don't want to give up $100 million you know, ourselves, but this involves, it's a great case.
Yeah.
Because it involves Hulk doing something bad with this guy's wife.
Well, we don't know if it was bad.
No, that's right. You're right. Only for the Puritans would it be seen as bad.
It's a 30-minute tape, too, so.
Is it?
Yeah.
Of which I think they only aired a minute and a half,
exactly.
Right? Or aired, I'm saying. They put it out on their website.
They put it on their website, and I love that the editors are taking credit for their careful editing.
Well, this is what's
the right. They put all 30 minutes.
I looked for it, but
Give
I couldn't find it.
Well, yeah, it's apparently not up anymore. They took.
Oh, they were ordered by
they
a judge
took
to the, take it
down. They took it down, yeah. So to speak, after it had been up there for a while.
Oh,
and
no.
The issue is really how the standards are such now that here is Gawker, which is actually a major media site nowadays.
Yeah.
That's what has so changed, that these online pure plays, the digital pure plays, as they say, are many of them so big, but the standards are so different from what we're accustomed to that we still see ourselves. And it may be that this trial is the last gasp of people trying to put the cork back in that bottle, because we now allow the kind of activity online that we never would have allowed in our more respectable legacy operations. He's suing for invasion of privacy, right? The anguish that was caused by this tape being out there. And it is kind of hard to imagine that a guy who has made his living by faking injury and faking fights and basically just putting himself out there in order to make money, you have to wonder how much misery he's actually gone through as to warrant $100 million, or if this whole lawsuit isn't in itself just another play for publicity.
I thought that,
right?
Until I read some of the testimony, and I don't like the way that, well, if they're journalists, the editors of Gawker's, I don't like the way they come off. They're extremely flippant.
Oh, yeah.
Flippant. They never checked, for example, to make sure that some of the people in these sex tapes that they run are actually the people they say it is. That seems pretty minimal to me. Hulk, is this you?
There's
you
also,
know?
Yeah.
Why is it newsworthy? Why is the sexual activity of celebrities newsworthy, as somebody saying we sort of all have sex, don't we?
Are you kidding? Well, first of all, speak for yourself.
About having sex?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
But in any case,
you need a censor in here.
But I have to say, this is interesting in that there's a little bit of sexism in this thing, because on the one hand, look at what we're saying about, oh, poor old Hulk, you know. And on the other hand, a jury awards an immense amount of money to a female news broadcaster who had her door fixed so that somebody could take films and has admitted to it. And this individual Marriott Hotel, not owned by the Marriotts, has to pay an immense amount of money.
Well, isn't that the same? How are those different?
Well, they're different. And one's a guy and one's not.
No, we're saying poor old Aaron Andrews either. Here, have $55 million.
Well, what are you saying?
Well, it's the same. It is the same issue, male or female.
It's the same issue, but one could say, because of contemporary standards, that if she cries on the stand, that it's a little different in terms of her privacy. This is the argument I'm just making. You didn't have any great problems with Hulk Hogan, you know what I mean?
I think it's wrong in both cases. I don't think this newscaster's hotel door should have been, the peephole was drilled into it. I think that's actually a little more than invasion of privacy. That's like kind of dangerous.
He's a stalker, basically.
Yeah,
he followed her all over the place.
That's scary stuff.
It is. And she was, I think you can demonstrate that she was, in fact, injured, damaged by this. I'm not saying that Gawker is right to go ahead and post this video of Hulk Hogan having sex with his best friend's wife. Apparently, they all had agreed that this ought to happen. It is not whether or not they should have had sex together. It is whether it should have been posted. So that's
right,
the
right.
issue.
Quite
this was,
right. I'm
this
glad
was
to see
all
keeping up with it.
Because. Yeah. Yeah. That's. Oh, yeah. Well, you got to pay attention. So that's the thing. What gets our attention gets us. People pay attention to this. That is the point of the Gawker editor's testimony, was that we give people this stuff because they want to see it. And Gawker is unabashedly looking for page views. They're not trying to be standards of journalism.
So if you're sitting on that jury, what do you say? I mean, you know, if 12 prim and proper jurors may well give Hulk a little money.
Yeah, I think he actually is owed it. He will have a harder fight than Aaron Andrews, because he has courted publicity. He has courted outrageous coverage of outrageous events his whole career. It's like Kim Kardashian is libel proof. What could you say about her that would be libelous, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think Hulk Hogan has some of this, too. Erin Andrews, on the other hand, she's a sportscaster. There were no sports going on. There was no football game in her room.
Exactly.
Well, definitions.
And it could be a matter of what state this is. Erin Andrews' case was heard in Tennessee. Hulk Hogan's is in Florida. If this were in New York State, it would be much harder for Hulk Hogan, or Terry Bollea, his real name, because we have no statutory right to privacy in New York. Right. And so there is much less opportunity for someone to file a lawsuit and to say, you've invaded my privacy. Well, you know, actually, in the state of New York, you don't have as much right to privacy as you do elsewhere.
Speaking of New York, can we talk about what's going on with J. Cope and some efforts in the legislature to once again stop freedom of information?
The Joint Committee on Public Ethics, it's referred to, J. Cope, we call it. They have, in fact, implemented a rule requiring public relations firms that seek to influence public opinion by contacting the media editorial boards to have to file as lobbyists. J. Cope considers that to be lobbying.
This is a commission which has been widely criticized for not doing its job very well. So now they come out with this thing saying, okay, anybody who tries to influence, any PR person tries to influence things should have to write down they did it. It's a clear violation of the First Amendment.
I think, but they don't believe so. They're going to, five PR firms have now filed a federal lawsuit trying to block this.
And well, they should.
Here's the problem, though. If it goes higher, it goes into the federal appeals court or to the Supreme Court, they likely will lose. The news organizations will lose.
Why?
Because the court has made a difference between speech that is monitored. If you're just watching and regulating speech, that is not the same as stopping it.
I'll bet you're wrong. And I'll bet when it goes to the Supreme Court of the United States, they're going to take an opportunity to strike a blow for the First Amendment.
Well, you know, the difficulty is if you're paying someone to try to influence public policy, if you hire a PR firm and say, we want you to make the legislature do what we want them to do, and the PR firm says, okay, there are several different methods. One of them is to give campaign contributions to legislators, okay, and to make visits to legislators' offices. One of them is regulated by the campaign finance laws. One is you have to reveal as lobbying disclosure. You disclose what lobbying you're doing. So it's only a fine line between visiting legislators' offices and talking to them directly and going to editorial boards and talking to them and saying, please write editorials on this.
Except that I don't see your dealings with legislators as protected the same way that the First Amendment protects. Although one could make the argument, couldn't they, that even your right to seek redress from the government is protected activity also.
It is actually the argument that J. Cope is making. J. Cope thinks that they're on solid ground, and they say they're looking forward to their day in court. But I can't imagine that we will be able to sustain a law that says that you have to report when you talk to a newspaper editor. But I have been getting phone calls now.
I know.
When I get a PR person calling me, I had a conversation yesterday on the phone with a guy who runs a PR firm who said, by the way, I am not lobbying you. This is the first thing he said when he called me.
Was he kidding?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. Yeah. We both laughed.
As Freud said, there is no joke.
It's no joke,
he was covering his Earl Butts.
Yeah.
I like it, Rosemary. You're,
he's
you're
covering
with the
his Earl.
You're with the program.
It might actually have been, you know, a little better if he was covering his Earl.
My timing's off.
What can you do? You know, Rosemary and I are primarily print journalists, so, you know, we get an opportunity to edit, which is a good thing, unlike this place. If you're just joining us, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith here. And if you'd like to share your thoughts on any of these important issues, we are media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org.
We don't get a lot of letters.
We don't get a lot. Why do you suppose that is? Isn't that interesting?
People are happy with what we say and do.
That's exactly it, I'm sure. Speaking of editorial boards, what about editorials?
What are you talking about? People don't like to write. If we had a call-in, we'd be getting
Of course, that's right.
No, yeah. Well, we have our early morning program, and they email
us. Well, that's
us
live,
all the
though.
Time.
That's live.
Yeah, you have to wait a week or two.
That's right. And it's also
immediate gratification.
Right.
Immediate gratification. And they're going to say my name on the radio. It's a wonderful thing. What do you think about newspapers editorializing in primaries? This comes up because the Sun Sentinel in Florida has decided not to endorse any of the Republican candidates for president because they don't like any of them. And so they cannot endorse.
Well,
they
that's
say.
Their right.
Mm-hmm.
Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale. Mm-hmm. I used to work there. This is an incredibly well-written, very good editorial. But I think it has almost no influence.
Yeah.
The editorial has no influence. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly does. We don't editorialize in primaries except where the primary is tantamount to election, like
in the
mayoral race, you know, where the Democratic enrollment edge in Albany is 11-1. And so if you win the Democratic primary, you're the candidate for mayor. And so we do endorse there, but we're not going to offer an endorsement in the Democratic
primary. What do you see as the difference between?
Well, there are two things. First, primarily, it's because if you endorse somebody in a primary and then turn around and don't endorse them in the general, that's a little bit awkward.
Nice. Although that happens on a fairly regular basis in newspapers.
Some newspapers do.
Yeah, they do.
Right. But it would seem to us, for example, our editorial board is fairly liberal, and for us to endorse a candidate in the Republican primary would require us to somewhat stand on our head and say, well, you know, We
like him as a candidate, just not as a winner.
Right. We don't really want him to be president.
That might be a small acrobatic twist. Huh?
One could argue this whole thing, I'll tell you right now, because it seems to me that if the Albany Times Union says, we don't like Trump and we don't like Cruz, but we do like Kasich a little bit more. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that Kasich is therefore our choice. And we think that the United States will be served by, let's say, having a Bernie or a Hillary versus a Kasich. And then you turn around and you endorse, which you will, either Bernie or Hillary. There's nothing wrong with that because, you know, it could be very dangerous if you were to turn around not do anything. And Trump, for example, would win and be antithetical to the aims of your editorial board.
Maybe we should be looking at what's the purpose of endorsements, political endorsements. The New York Times kind of did an endorsement for The Nation, and they picked Kasich and Hillary Clinton. A whole lot of voters are not listening or paying any attention to that.
Well, that's traditional.
So what's the value of doing an editorial like that?
Well, they have to. They have a rule. We have an editorial page, and there has to be something printed on that editorial page.
That's a radio guy speaking here.
Well,
right.
Some of the editorials are meaningful, and some of them are pap. You know, we got to have one today, and so we're going to write about
this. I think that probably same could be said about your column.
We're going to write about the salamanders crossing the road. I'll ignore that. Right?
No, they're all golden words, thoroughly researched and thoughtful, and I'm the same way. I have to, some days, you know, the column is due and you think, oh no.
Sure, what am I going to do?
Oh no. But you just have to hope for, generally, of course, it's like anything else in journalism. If you have a problem with your writing, it's usually a result of inadequate reporting.
Yep.
Or eating or sleeping. Or inadequate.
Drinking, I would say.
Too much of that.
But your columns are always interesting, Rex Smith.
Interesting is one of those words.
No, they are. And
thank you.
What always impresses me is the picture they have of you. It takes up a lot of room. And it's standing there, and your arms are crossed across your chest.
No, I don't mind.
Arms akimbo.
Akimbo,
is that the word?
I love that word.
Akimbo, I didn't know what that meant.
On his hips.
You can say that?
Yeah.
It's in the AP style book.
One of the things that we have learned from this primary season, by the way, is how little political analysts know, with all due respect, Dr. Chartok, because people predicting the outcome of these races have time and time again been shown to really not know
You're
anything.
Right.
It's really been off.
Michigan being the latest example.
Yeah. Hillary had Hillary up by double digits, and yet she lost by little.
I maintain that I think the campaign even made the mistake of believing those polls.
I think
she under-campaigned in Michigan and paid a price for it.
That's a result of polling, but what is concerning is that television especially has to have a lot of analysts on saying, well, here's what, and everybody's offering their little analysis because there's airtime to fill, it seems to me, and nobody really knows what's going on this year. It's an extraordinary situation. It is actually showing the flaws in political analysis.
As a journalist, I love seeing the fumbling around as we try to make sense of it. It reminds me of 2000 when the decision on the Gore Bush case came out of the Supreme Court. It was a huge case. Every one of the justices, all nine of them, wrote a separate opinion. And on air, the anchors are trying to figure out what the heck it means.
And we've all been there.
And we're doing the same thing now, only it isn't just a matter of moments. It's a matter of months now that we're trying to figure out what is this?
What is
well, if Rex
it'll
could,
be a book.
If Rex
eventually.
Could just show up a little earlier, we'd have more preparation time.
Like you would prepare. Anyway, folks, the time is over for this program for one more week, and we hope that you've appreciated it somewhat anyhow. Be careful what words you use in responding. Dr. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.